Our next session, and let's just call it our keynote session with our keynote speaker, Dr. Kerry Hardy, who is coming to us to talk to us about by far the simplest and cleanest topic, the role of the sending church versus the supporting church versus the local church. They're going to sort out all those questions for us, and very, very grateful. Kerry and I have, we've walked through some of those things, so I'm grateful for you leading us in this.
So do I need to turn something? Yeah, so I need to tell you a funny story here real quick. When this all first came up, a couple months ago, I don't know, way back, I got really excited about it because at our church, I'm the senior pastor, but I think just because through the years, the 19 years I've been there, I've been the one that knew some of the missionaries that were out there, so it, by default, it just kind of came to me, I think, and I'm glad to be involved with the missionaries and missions, and some of those missionaries, many of them are my friends, and went to seminary together and stuff like that, so it has just stayed that way. So I was excited to come to learn, and then he put these topics out and said, pick one, and so I did. And then something happened in my mind over the next couple of days. I'm 71, so that's part of the problem. And so for the next month or so, or 6 weeks, I did a lot of research and preparation and reading for the wrong seminar. And so I put together a seminar on missions agencies, the one you just heard. And so it wasn't until Sunday night, you know, the night before last, I'm lying in the bed, going to get up early yesterday morning, and I'm all packed by that point, but I got to get up and drive here. I'm lying in bed, and before I turn the light out, I'm going to check the schedule one more time to find out when my seminar on missions agency is. And boy, did I have a shock. I'm not doing that seminar. And so suddenly I'm impressed with the fact that I got nothing. You know, I haven't prepared for this. So I texted him immediately. I said, oops, we got a big problem. And he said something like, be warm and be filled or something. I don't know. It was the ES version of that phrase, I think, you know. But so any questions? And then this whole time, all this expectation has been just being built up. It's all building to this seminar. And I'm going, no, it's not. In fact, everything's already been said that I could even come up with. But nevertheless, you can ignore that sketchy syllabus that's in there. I just gave you a real scaled-down syllabus, and he gave you a real detailed one, so go with his. Forget mine. But there certainly is no syllabus with what I'm about to not say. You know, this is going to be more of a stream of consciousness, I guess. Which is fine with me because I really came to learn. I didn't really come to tell you a lot. And I'm glad that all has been said. And I'm glad this is right before lunch. And that's all you're thinking about is lunch. And so you just want to get to that. So, but I'll do the best I can. We all know and affirm that the local church is more than just a weekly service. You know, it's not just a building. And it's not just even a nice building. It's not just weekly classes and so forth, that we are fulfilling several purposes that we know the Lord gives us in His Word. We are the caretakers of the truth, the pillars of the truth. We are the proclaimers of the truth. That's our product, so to speak. We are a place for shepherding to take place, shepherding care of God's sheep. We are a place for people to use their giftedness and exercise that. We are a place for training and equipping believers. All of that fits into the purpose of the church. But no doubt, we are to be known as a dynamic, mission-minded community. And so that does mean being intentional. And I'm really instructing myself and thinking out loud with you about all of this so that I can do it better. Our church can be more intentional, but we do need to be intentional about cultivating a mindset where every member of the church understands that this is also part of the purpose of the church. Everybody, as one author said at one time, everybody is either a goer or a sender. You're on one side of that, all involved in the same endeavor. Now, this past Sunday, we at Twin City Bible Church celebrated our 70th year as a church. That technically the date's not for another 6 weeks, but that's the Sunday we chose. So 70 years of faithful ministry. It was formed in 1995 in the living room of a couple. 55, what did I say?
95.
Yes, 71 years old. I'm glad you're helping me, because at home it's my wife that does that, you know. No, Carrie, it was 12 years ago that we did this. Oh, are you sure? I thought it was last year. No, it was 12 years ago. I have no concept of time now. But 1955, formed in the living room of a couple along with another couple. When I came there 19 years ago, the founding couple was still alive and still in the church, but they're with the Lord now. But they formed, and when you read the history of it, they formed it to be an independent Baptist church at that time with a missions mindset. I mean, they would be very mission-oriented. And so when I came 19 years ago, that was true. It's just that the church had come through some doctrinal difficulties. There were a couple of splits, severe splits that happened before I came. When I contacted the church the first time, they were in between the two splits. And so the associate pastor was honestly telling me what was going on at the church and how many people they lost. And he said, 2 weeks from now, we're going to have another split. We're going to have another business meeting, and it's not going to be pretty, and there's going to be more split. And normally you'd hear all that and say, well, listen, I got to go, but I'm going to pray for you guys. But we kept talking, and I actually became interested. I think I just had a desire to see the Lord work all that out, and I think thought he would, and so on and so forth. So I came, but they had cut their budget down to nothing. Talking about budget. They had about, 17 missionaries, I think. And so I was interested in that, see who they were. Didn't know any of them. And it didn't take me long. In that first year, I learned that most of them needed to be let go. And so that was one of the things I did. The first year I was there, began to send letters out and cut support to 15 of their missionaries. And we kept 2 out of the 15 that we still have today that I thought were quality. So that was a difficult time. They had cut their support down so much just to bring on a pastor. And they were barely paying me anything. Fortunately, we'd sold our house in California, and so we lived on that for a couple of years just to make it. And I remember there was one missionary they were supporting $18.50 a month. And I was like, can we at least round it up to like 20, an even number, $20, $18.50 a month. And this person had been on the field for like 40 years, and that's what we were doing. It was embarrassing. But then we cut all their support, for most of them. So I didn't feel so bad about it, after that. But certainly that was part of our history, the importance of missions. And they had a secretary. They had the first 6 months I was there, they let the secretary go in order to keep me, So that's how precarious the finances were at that time. But at least we had the mindset, in the DNA of the church. Well, through the years, I've thought more about that, and I'll tell you about something in a moment or two, just what's really pushed me over the edge to want to think about all this, something our church went through. But it's how to cultivate this mission mindset, how to foster it. We had new people coming, so I wanted to keep that going. And how do we become a sending church? I mean, that's like the pinnacle, in my mind, to actually send somebody out. Well, I'm certain we all do some form of the obvious things to foster that mission mindset in the church, to be a sending church. I don't know how many missionaries you've sent out, if any, or anything like that, but the obvious bullet point things that we do are sermons. We preach on the importance of missions around the world and evangelism. From time to time we do that. In our church, from time to time we have what's called just a missions moment. We haven't done it recently, but we had different men in the congregation. I would assign them a particular missionary in history, and in the service they would just give a 5-minute report, who this missionary was and what God did through him, just to get that in the minds of people. Certainly when our missionaries came home to give reports, that was always an exciting time for our church. except for the missionaries we were supporting at that time, their reports were not so exciting and encouraging. But that was all new to me experientially in some ways. I got a taste of it at Grace Community Church because there were missionaries that would come back and you get to know them. I wasn't raised that way. I was raised Southern Baptist. And so all I knew was this thing called the cooperative program that was mentioned yesterday. It was the pot. You know, there's a big pot. And so you just give your money to that pot. And if we ever wanted a missionary to come speak, we didn't know any personally at all. My father, who was our pastor, he would call the state office and say, "You got any missionaries, you know, on furlough you can send to us? We'd like to introduce a missionary to our church." And never knew them personally or anything like that. I did learn through the years that those missionaries are pretty well taken care of, though, compared to a lot of missionaries. They have a good financial program. But anyway, now, you know, to actually know missionaries and they come home, that's an exciting time for your people, our people as well. That helps. But any way you can, you're painting the picture, you're casting the vision. Especially in my mind, I'm thinking of the younger people there, the high schoolers and the single adults, the college and career, to hopefully cast a vision of how God might use them. Though we have sent out some missionaries now, we have sent out three in the 19 years I've been there. It took a while to have our first one, but the first two were retired people. Okay, so they weren't just the younger folks. We sent a retired nurse to Africa to work in a village for a while as a village nurse. We sent a retired couple to Mexico to help with administrative things. And then finally, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, we sent out one of our elders who really believed God was calling him into missions, and he went to seminary to be trained, and now he's with TMAI and GMI in Cairo, Egypt. They were just home for the summer. So that was, I don't know, it was really the first time that I felt like we really sent somebody out to the mission field, to the trenches. Those retired folks, eventually they retired again because of health reasons and stuff like that. So the point is, with all that, regardless of age, we want a church culture where young people, older adults, whoever can explore this whole idea of being used by God in missions, you know, give them guidance and mentor them and encourage them and all that kind of stuff. So we do all those things just like you do. We just built a new building, and it's much bigger and better than this one. It's this. But we finally got something I've always wanted, you know, is a wall. We have a missionary wall now. So we found a place where you could get the globe of the world, the flattened, you know, if you're the Flat Earth Society, you would love this thing. I mean, you know, it's all flat, the world. And pictures of all of our missionaries, we built them back up through the years with high, you know, good quality people and that we can support. And all their photos are there and strings coming to the country where they serve. And it's just a great thing. People love to come and look at our mission wall. Every time they walk by it, they're reminded that we're a missions-minded church. And certainly above all, we pray, even as our elders, we pray that God would call people out of our church family to serve him overseas somewhere in a cross-cultural context, I think is what you call it now. And you don't say foreign missions anymore, I guess, you know, but that's the way I think of it still. We pray for that, and it's been exciting to see that. In our high school ministry, we've created this four-year program that we're taking high school students through, and a three-year program through for middle school students. And included in there is talking about this, you know, missions and cross-cultural ministry and all that. Again, hoping that God would plant a seed in some person's heart to be trained for that. I am excited that we have one of our seminary students that has a heart for missions and doesn't know where the Lord wants him to go, but that's what he would do. So all of this, I'm sure other things you could list, is what we do to help people make form a missions mindset, or some like to call it a missional mindset. But we do these things to remind the church constantly that every member is, what I said earlier, either a goer or a sender, one of the two. And so that helps us shift our focus from just evangelism in our own community, which that's important to us, to something more comprehensive, to realize that we're part of a worldwide effort and a comprehensive worldwide community-based approach to making disciples around the world. And we want that understood because we do believe the Great Commission is not just something given to a select few. It's the mandate ultimately of every believer, and it's the mandate of the church, every local church. We are participants, every member participants in the salvation that we find in Christ, but we are, as members, an ambassador. Every single member has to understand that I'm a potential ambassador for Christ in some way. So I like to think of the Great Commission not just as a dead mandate, but it's a living mandate with a living promise that drives us to try to reach every corner of the earth under our Reformed soteriology, of course. So that's the biblical mandate. It's clear that missions is the calling of the whole church. It is local churches that's at the heart of all that, and you've heard that emphasized already, so I can skip over a lot of my thoughts there. Every missionary on the field should be a reflection of a sending church that's behind them, a church family that they look to, that they know is praying for them and supporting them and walking with them every step of the way. Somewhere I read it like this, it's a sacred partnership is what it is. Our people and our churches with these missionaries around the world. So just as Paul had Antioch, and you've already seen that in the seminars this week, these 2 days, Acts 13, I think in Jeff's seminar he mentioned Acts 11, Acts 15, Acts 16. Just as Paul, you know, had that church at Antioch, we have to have sending churches that are deeply invested in this worldwide effort. I found this quote from a group called Global Frontier Missions. I don't know anything about them really, but the role of the local church in missions is to serve as the primary engine of the Great Commission by identifying, equipping, and sending out believers to share the gospel while simultaneously providing robust support. And I like that quote because the word robust, that's a TES word. TES people say the word robust all the time. When I go to board members, I keep track. I count the times that the word robust is used. Jerry Ragg loves that word. And so everybody else has adopted it. So this is a good TES support. While we simultaneously provide robust support, both financial and prayerful, to those on the mission field. So I'm going to briefly talk then about the sending church just for a moment. And then even more briefly, the home church, the local church. But word about our budget, I like what was asked earlier about the budget. We don't have a goal of a particular percentage. There's been so many factors enter into how much we give to missions. But we have had one goal, and we've been living by it now for several years, and that is every budget year we want to give more to missions than we gave the year before. So that's just sort of the way we look at it, and it's not a percentage, so we try to figure out how can we do that. And if you ask me what the percentage is, I wouldn't even be able to tell you. But I can tell you, well, we're giving more this year than we did last year, because that's our goal. So I do know that. So the responsibility of sending church and missions is multifaceted, and so here are just a reminder to us is what we already know, a few of the key responsibilities of a sending church. Certainly training and preparation is part of that. Sending churches have to find a way to be intentional in discipling and shepherding the prospective missionary. And so that includes, as we've already affirmed here, shaping and informing their theology and confirming that theology. It includes helping the missionary begin to identify a field that's on their heart, where their heart's affinity is toward that people group or that a field of ministry, and confirm that that's the field where they're going to go. I've come to understand that that's the sending church's responsibility to do that. There's practical training involved beyond all the theological training. There's the practical training that can include yes, connecting them with an appropriate organization that they could partner with. That's possible. That could be helpful. But it's still the sending church's responsibility to make sure all this is happening. If I'm going to connect them with a group or an agency that can help them learn more about the culture that they're headed to and help with some of the logistics, that's all fine and good. But I think my main takeaway, and we were sharing that out in the hall, my main takeaway from these 2 days is that even all those logistical things, even visas and things like that, we actually could do that if we just worked harder at it. We've got people in our church that could even help with that. But anyway, that's part of our responsibility. So if we're going to connect them with a group and an agency, the elders need to know who that agency is and know what they're about and really validate that choice. That choice needs to be approved by the elders. In all the research I did about missions agencies, I learned a lot. And Kurt expressed this really in a way, but I learned that there's two basic types. This was all new to me. Two basic types, and there's a spectrum, and they all fit somewhere in between. There's the one extreme that is the, for lack of a better word, I think it's employer. And at this end, they have all the authority. They are the employer. They call the shots. They provide the training. They provide the care, the shepherding. They choose where they're going to go or not go. If they need to come off the field, it's that employer that makes that decision. They handle the money. They do everything. And so that's an extreme form of this end. And this end down here is that other word you used, the clearinghouse or the service provider, you could even call them. And so if they're at that extreme, it literally is just handling the money, you know, every month and giving out some reports, you know, to the donors. Well, in between those two extremes, there's everything in between. And so some of those agencies that I've learned about now are more toward this end, and some of them are more toward this end. And I'm sensing that, and I know in my own heart, I like the ones more at this end that are the clearinghouse and the service providers and not the employers. And I'll give an example of that in just a moment. But the elders need to make that decision of what's going to be appropriate and confirm that this agency is going to do what they're promising to do and not do what they're not promising to do and all that. That's part of the training and part of the preparation of the sending church. Another element of a sending church is then once this person has identified their field and you've approved that and you feel like you've provided some training on that, the logistical things are in place, then yes, it's the church's responsibility, the sending church, to commission that person to go, or that family or that couple. And so this commissioning service is then the public declaration of responsibility that the sending church has and the missionary has on this field where they're going. And so it's a way for the sending church to make it very clear to the people, this is what we're committing to. This is what this missionary is committing to. This is what we're committing to supporting. I think some churches, they do the commissioning, they celebrate that, but they haven't really done all this other stuff. You know, they've left that to somebody, but they want to have the commissioning service and claim the missionary. But the sending starts long before. Sending is a lot more than just having a commissioning service. There's the support that's necessary. That's part of the training, the sending church's responsibility. It's very obvious that churches are going to provide support. That includes financial support, and we do have that mindset. I'm sure you do too. We support missionaries that we have not sent out. We want them to be quality missionaries. But if we've sent them out, then we commit to a higher level support. And I was telling Chris yesterday, every missionary that we send out, we provide $200,000, not really. I was telling Chris that, yeah, we give all of our missionaries, I think I said, $150,000 a year. And we don't want them to have to worry about finding other churches to, you know, to back them up or anything. At first he was staring at me, you know, but glazed eyes. Yeah, but we do support them more than we do others, because we sense that responsibility. But that financial support is going to have to include helping them with fundraising, how to go about that, networking with other missionaries. Again, if another group can help them with this that we approve, that's fine. But ultimately, we've come to understand as an elder board in the last year that this is all our responsibility. We've got to take this more seriously, and we haven't done that in the past. We've punted almost everything to other groups. And we're not going to do that anymore. This support includes prayer support. I want to say a little bit more about that. That's so obvious, prayer support. But the missionaries certainly want to know that their churches are praying for them. And the sending church's responsibility is to do that, to select them and to prepare them and commission them and support them financially, but to support them with prayer. Prayer for their spiritual growth, prayer for their character, prayer for their marriages, their parenting, growth in their skills on the field and on the field, praying for their ability to adapt to the culture and learn the language, if, depending on where they're going. You know, our elder that we sent out, you know, he was in his 40s. I think he was 40 when he decided to, Lord was calling him to ministry, and did training, got his MDiv and THM and all that, and is now in Cairo, Egypt, and he and his wife are learning Arabic. I mean, that just kind of boggles my mind when I think about that, you know. And I told him that. I said, you're 40. You know, are you sure you can learn Arabic? You know, isn't that kind of hard? Why don't you go someplace where they already speak English? You know, they need the Lord too, you know. So, and he had some Spanish. And he knew some Spanish. I said, go there. You know, you already... And so he thought about it and checked it out, but believed the Lord was, you know, pointing him to Cairo. So there they are. I've been there 3 years. And so we pray for that all the time for them when we check in with them, their language acquisition. We pray for their effectiveness on the field. The bottom line is that a vibrant sending church is going to be characterized by their regular prayer for their missionaries and those who are serving on the field. And so we try to do that intentionally. Again, we're growing in that. We've sought to organize intercessory prayer teams for missionaries. We've divided up the missionaries among all of our care groups. We have about 20 small groups, and each one have adopted a missionary that they pray for and they try to stay in touch with. We update prayer needs all the time in our services and newsletters. We use messaging apps and anything else we can, email, whatever, to let the emails know that we are covering them in prayer. And we're just handing out something. We haven't told the body yet this, but someone in our church has helped us with this, that we've created a little card for every missionary that we support. And I think we support about 20. And it's got their picture on it, and it's got just a one-line overall prayer request. And we punch a hole with it, and we're putting rings on it. And so this little ring of prayer cards that we're giving out to everybody in our church, just so that they can, well, it's a rosary, bottom line, you know. Just want to be honest about it. It's like a rosary. And they can, you know, thumb through that. This is not being recorded, is it? Yeah, but I think that's going to be an exciting thing for our people. So there's financial support, prayer support, relational support. That's part of the sending church's responsibility, the relational support. And I don't know, I just don't think we've taken that as seriously as we should have in the past. But whether it's assigning a care team like we've done to zero in on one missionary, or a point person who's regularly checking in with the people. I mean, basically at our church, that's ended up being I. But looking for some other people to help with that. We seek to remember their birthdays, their anniversaries. We've sent care packages, you know, each care group sending their missionary a little care package with gifts for the children and things like that they need. And we schedule Zoom calls and FaceTime calls, just like you do, to stay in touch. But not only to talk about ministry, but just to chat about their lives. But certainly we ask hard questions, too. And those calls about their family and their ministry and their lives. But it's going to necessitate being a sending church like this to keep that relational support. It necessitates more than just a Zoom call. And that is visiting the missionary on the field. So when you start thinking about that as a sending church, well, depending on how many you've sent out, this can start to feel overwhelming. And I understand why people want to punt to a missions agency. You know, we've only sent out 3, and 2 of them are now retired, so we only have 1 that's on the field. But we have another one that didn't have a sending church, and he was a national, and asked if we would be his sending church. And so through the back door, we said, okay, we'll be your sending church, you know. And so to stay more in touch with that individual, but it's going to necessitate visiting the missionary on the field. Ideally, not just me, but all of our elders have an opportunity at some point to go visit the missionaries that we're supporting, especially ones that we've sent out. Short-term teams can help with this relational support, interns for a while to send to that missionary to strengthen the partnership. All that, if it's appropriate, can help this. The point is that these missionaries are living life out there and they're facing spiritual warfare. fare just like we do. They feel isolation. They're dealing with culture shock at times and exhaustion. And so without all this ongoing support, beyond just the financial support, but the prayer support and the relational support from the sending churches, even the best missionary out there, the most energetic, the most passionate one, can start to feel forgotten or feel alone and feel burned out. So it's a partnership that's multifaceted, and it's a partnership that's ongoing to stay updated on what they're doing and giving updates to the church and including them in the decision-making about their ministry and what's going to impact their region and the demographic there and whatever. Another important issue, the sending church has to sense its responsibility to get involved in resolving issues that come up on the field. And I've learned that by default here over the last year, that some missions agencies, if they're at this end over here and really are employers and really call all the shots, they have all the authority, and they seek to resolve issues on the field, and sometimes don't involve the sending church. But I've come to realize that, no, that's the sending church's responsibility. Issues in their personal lives, issues in their marriages and their families, issues with other team members, I'm convinced that that's crucial. Some of you already know this because of what our church has just done, that it has surfaced the issue of authority for me. And so that's what I've been trying to think through. And that's what I've come these 2 days to try to get some more information from you about. And so it has been helpful. But more than one of you have said that. It boils down to that. Who has the authority over this missionary? And so there's one of our missionaries that we support. I'll just leave it at that. Many of you already know this, what's going on. But there were some issues on the field with other team members. And so the missions agency got involved and, began to interview people one by one. And I think that was part of the problem that I saw from my perspective, that there wasn't a whole lot being done of all the entities together at one time in one room and trying to sort through this stuff. It's kind of like marital counseling. You can only talk to the husband alone and the wife alone a certain number of times. At some point, you've got to get them together to hear what's being said and to hear the rebuttals and everything else. Well, that takes a lot of work. And so on this particular case, there was some tension and bad relationships on the field amongst team members. And so data was gathered one by one a lot. I do know if you go back 2 or 3 years that a couple of the pastors from their supporting churches did go to the field and try to work through something, at least one issue with one individual. But that's the only time that was really done like that. And so the end result was the missions agency decided that after gathering information one by one, that this particular missionary was the problem and was wrong and needed to come off the field and needed to, even though he's not a citizen of the United States, needed to come to the States for a year to be discipled and counseled and to work through these issues in his heart. And our church was selected for that. And so for the last almost a year, this individual was at our church, and I took the issues at face value and their heart issues, and I know the kind of heart idolatry that would prompt those kind of actions. And so I just took the perspective that if this is what you've done, if this is the way you've done, Ben, with these other team members, then what's causing that? You know, what's the real sin that's going on here? And so everything we did for a course of a year, which took a lot of my time, was working on these heart issues. But I began to realize as I had conversations with the sending agency that our elders were confused, and I was confused over who decides whether he's ready to go back to the field or not. Who decides if he goes back to that field or somewhere else? Who decided that he even came off the field? Whose decision was that? Who had the authority over all that? And it was the missions agency. And so our elders began to ask questions about halfway through this thing. Well, if we decide that this man still has ministry left in him, if we decide that he can go back to his home country, is the mission agency going to submit to that? And it became unclear whether they were going to do that or not. And in my conversations with them, it even got more unclear whether they were going to submit to that or not. And so our elders were a little concerned about that, that, well, then we don't have the ultimate authority, even though we're called this individual sending church. So all of that surfaced for me, the need for what we're talking about, that those things have to be understood, because I do believe the local church, the sending church, has that ultimate authority. And whether right or wrong, and the way they need to come to their conclusions is getting involved in that missionary's life. And if I could back up the clock in this case, I can go back even further and say there was confusion in years past over this issue of authority, because this individual not only had the missions agency, which is an employer at this end of the extreme, had the missions agency with authority. There was a local church on the field that this missionary was a part of, and elders, so there's some authority there. This missionary had formed a board, and I was on that board, and three or four other men and pastors were on that board. And through the years, you're trying to give guidance to things, but even still asking, so who has the ultimate authority over all this? Are we really a board? We began to understand we're not really even a board. We're a consulting team at best to give some opinions. But the agency that's part of a local church, they had the authority. They called the shots. And then there's the elder board at that church, and there's a subcommittee of elders from that elder board at that church. And so for me, it looked like there's about five entities that all have authority at some level over this ministry. Who has ultimate authority? And it became clear to me that the agency did. And that's been confirmed over the last year. So I don't think that we handled everything right along the way. I wish I could turn back the clock and do some things differently. But it certainly surfaced that for us at our church, if we're going to call ourselves a sending church, then from here on, we're going to take it seriously. We're not just going to punt. We're going to say that we're going to be involved, and we're going to do it. And to try to shepherd the especially the missionaries that we send out. One more thing about the shepherding, that is, if they re-enter the United States to come home for furloughs or home leave or whatever, the sending church, I've learned through the years, depending on how long someone's overseas, culture shock is in reverse when they come back home, because they've grown more and more distant from what's going on in the culture in the United States, and they have trouble even being here and are kind of anxious to get back home, overseas. But the sending church has to give space for all that rest and debriefing and dealing with difficult things in their lives and giving them opportunity to share their experiences and their joys and their struggles and all that. All these responsibilities are essential, but granted, it is a challenge to do all this. And that's the other point that I came to. If we're going to take it seriously, this is time consuming. I mean, maybe I like the agency after all, I found myself, kind of waffling over this, It's like, I mean, even to get this particular individual over here in the States, one of our lay elders had to spend, I don't know how many hours over weeks with an immigration attorney trying to figure out the logistics that would allow this individual, who's not a citizen of the United States, to be in the United States for this year, under what kind of visa or what kind of permit, and things like that. That was a lay elder who has a full-time job and was doing all that. If he hadn't have done that, I don't know who would have done it, I can't see myself doing that, even though I feel like I should. So it's a challenge for busy elders. So I'm not against the agencies. I understand, just as Kurt said, there's a place for that, but some are better than others. Some have different philosophies than others, but it is the issue of authority. That's what needs to be settled. Who has the authority to make these decisions? I believe the sending church should confirm that, no, this is where his heart is, the passion of his heart is. It's this particular country, this particular field, and we've studied that, and we agree with that. Instead of a missions agency saying, no, we don't see that. We don't see him going there. We see him going to one of these two choices over here. Well, that's our job. That's the elder's job. Issues that come up in their family and stuff like that, I think that's our job. Even ministry decisions, much of that we've got to enter in on. So if an agency is going to be used, then I would encourage you, know what's going on with them. Granted, Shane said that he investigated one that sounded really, 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 really good. All the philosophy was there. I mean, they're saying the right things, but when it got down to, can you help us with a visa? We just want you to help us with the logistics. Here they said no. You know, well, that's a problem. So you got to really vet them and determine where the authority lies for helping the missionary confirm their calling, helping the missionary to know whether they're qualified to go or not, to vet them, to train them, to shepherd them, to care for them, to move them on, or to remove them from the field. I think that's the elders of the sending church. We have to rise to the occasion and do that. So my final thoughts on that are that missionaries are the ones who go, but they don't go alone. They go with us in all those categories because the Great Commission was given to the church, not just to a few individuals. Now, the other issue, what about the local, is that what you meant, the local church on the field?
National.
The national church. I got nothing. Okay. So any questions about that? I tell you what I wrote down here last night in my hotel room. I stayed up late just working on even what I have since Kurt stole my seminar. I have many questions about the lines of authority there as well, because I do understand this basic principle. If they're a local church and if there's some elders there, they have some authority. That's part of my ecclesiology, where that missionary serves. That's important. And yet I understand, to be practical about it, you know, that's what we say instead of pragmatic, to be practical about it and wise about it, I understand that depending on where that is, that can be a very immature church, at least relatively immature. It may be that where they are in their history, they're able to carry on the ministry of those sheep in that situation, but dealing with some major global issues related to the missionary, it may be beyond them right now. They just may be unable to resolve some difficult issues that come up. But I don't want to let go of what I believe about them as a local church where that missionary is serving. And if he's an elder or he's submitting to some other elders in that church, we have to be sensitive to that. So I think that church also has to be brought into the decision-making. So at the very least, I've concluded this, and in our discussions, maybe we can correct and expand on all this, but at the very least, I believe this. If issues come up on the field, if the missionary needs to come off the field, if there are problems between team members on the field, if the missionary is considering a move to a new location or a new ministry, at the least, the more mature sending church still needs to work with that local national church to make decisions. There's got to be a partnership there with the more mature sending church, not coming across that, well, we're the Americans and we know what to do because we have our MDivs. Was that you that said that, you know? But I'm honoring the ecclesiology that I hold to about that local church. And so I think together, at least, there can be some shepherding and some decisions made. They must be contacted and consulted and brought into the process of resolving the issue. Now, there could be, that's the best I can come up with for the national church, Shane, sorry. There could be a situation in which a missionary has been part of that local church for so long. The years have gone by, the church leadership has matured enough that the sending church then may yield, okay? And choose to yield to the counsel and authority of that local church. I think that would be a wonderful thing to happen. So I'm still thinking through all that, as you can understand. What I'm not comfortable with, just to drive the point home again, is a missions agency having the authority to make all those decisions. I'm not comfortable with that. And I don't want to work with agencies like that. I can see that agency at that extreme, as the employer, can make the decision that they believe is wise for them. And that is, well, we're going to disconnect and have no more involvement in that missionary's life. They have the right to do that. They can fire the missionary, so to speak, as an employer. and use their efforts, you know, towards somebody else. One of the complications I saw is that that employer is holding on to all the money. And sometimes there's money that's been raised that's sitting in a pot that this missionary has raised. So what happens to that money when that happens? And I've heard different stories of what happens to the money that's sitting in the pot that some missionary has raised. Sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. And still thinking through that part, what's right and wrong about all that. But nevertheless, I can see that they can end the partnership, but I believe looking back even on this situation, our elders were of the mindset that the character issues and the things that could that needed to be dealt with could be dealt with that missionary staying on the field where they were, and actually incorporate another elder that was in their church and another pastor in another church in the same city that had an interest in the situation who was willing to help. I think it could have been solved differently. But, you know, could God have stopped it? Yes. Did he? No. So he has his will and why what he allowed to happen. In conclusion, and you're thinking, conclusion to what? You hadn't really said anything, but in my notes it does say conclusion. So I think we can agree on this. The church is the heartbeat of global missions. And so we foster this mindset among the sheep. We do everything we know to do that. We promote the leadership development. We nurture accountability. We build global partnerships. We do all that. And I'm at the place now where it's scary to me, you know, because of the responsibility and the time. But I want to do it, you know. I don't want to end my ministry, you know, saying that I just punted everything to a missions agency. I want our elders in our church to take it seriously. And so I've already talked to them that we're going to start visiting people on the field. Let's work it in the budget. You know, we're going to do Zoom calls when we can, but we're also going to visit and stay involved. And I take comfort in the fact, back to the Great Commission, I take comfort in the promise that's part of the Great Commission, right? It's not just the commission that as you go, you know, make disciples. You know, the going is understood. So there's sort of inherent command there in that it's understood in that participle that you will be going, but you're going to make disciples. But it's what Jesus said, that we have the promise of his enduring presence and help to the end of the age, you know, in this missions endeavor, even though we're weak and frail and don't do everything correct sometimes. I think that promise is the anchor for all the mission work that we do. All right. Now, correct all that, Shane, by asking your good in-depth questions.
I was very good for just a pillow talk. I love that point about how, we love the moment when we lay our hands on the missionary and the rah, rah, we're sending him out. But we didn't do anything. We're just punting.
We take credit for it.
It makes me think of my relationship with Richard. People come and compliment the landscaping and stuff like that. And I just live in it. Yeah. I was like, well, thank you. We worked hard at that, even though I know Richard is the guy that takes care of all that. When I mean, there's just so many good things there. I should just start by perhaps commenting on something and having you comment on it back, because you didn't really mention a third group, which is the supporting church. You have sending churches. You have the
because you didn't
church.
Put that in the title of the seminar.
Well,
you said
that's a problem.
Sending and local.
Yeah.
And so in my hotel room last night, I just thought about those two
check
words.
Check the boxes.
Okay. So now you want me to think about supporting.
Because we are in these relationships where we're supporting somebody, maybe substantially, every month, but we're not the sending church. And when we do that, we have to understand that we're not in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
So I think it's incumbent on us to recognize we're not just partnering with this man who came to visit our church on a weekend. We're partnering with that elder board.
Yeah.
So when a decision is made and they exercise their authority, we're submitting to them, in what is going on with that particular guy. So we got to, as supporting churches, really think about that level of partnership, not just that person, if we're really imbibing what you're talking about in terms of the sending church.
Yeah, and so a thought about that. We obviously, by numbers, we've got on our mission wall, most of these were not their sending church, were their supporting church. Here's what I have began to think recently a lot of them, and a lot of the people I know that's on the field that I went to seminary with, we might support them. And I'm realizing now, I wish I had found out who their sending churches are. But I think I know the answer of how they think. Mm-hmm. Because of where they went to seminary, and because there's a missions agency on the campus of that church, where that unnamed seminary is, they graduate being sent out by that church. And so their sending church is the church, was not really their home church. And so I think that's part of the problem, is they don't really have that mindset that their home church is their sending church. It's the one where all the money is and all the people are, and where they went to seminary and when they went to church. And they want to be sent out by that church. Yeah. And that church lays hands on them on an evening service and sends them out. But it's not their home church.
Yes, Dave. Other questions?
Yeah, I got a companion question with that, and I want to hear from these real missionaries. Would you rather have 50 churches that are all supporting you at $200 a month, you know, so that if one or two drop out, you're okay? Or would you want the four elephants, you know, each supporting you, you know, $2,000, but then they get a new pastor and one of them, you know, drops out and now you're not supporting you anymore. Now, I understand communicating with the churches is a challenge. I asked Brad Clausen that one time. I said, same question, because I'm curious about this. Should we have fewer, support them more? But I like my mission wall. I like my board. I mean, I have all these. I mean, we're all over the world. I love that. And he said, well, the issue is reporting and staying in touch and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, what if most of them were like us, if we're just your supporting church? You don't have to come. You know, just send us updates and stuff like that. We trust you and we'll pray for you and we'll keep giving you your money. And he said, well, okay, if all of them are like that, then I'd like to have 50 or 100, you know. But I'm curious about that, because it's the other side of that question.
Yeah, it's the church responsibility and then from the perspective of missionaries.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll jump in there. Paul Lamy and I have had this conversation before. You know, we have been somewhat intentional to say, or I've been intentional just to tell missionaries that I think they should limit their church relationships to 10 or at the most 12, for the very reasons that Carrie's talking about. If you put all your eggs in one basket and that church goes through upheaval, which, as we know, churches do, then not only does the American church perhaps have to go through that trial, but you're sometimes having to recall a missionary from the field because now suddenly that church can't support him. So you want to spread that out enough where one upheaval in a church doesn't require the missionary to have to leave the field, but not so broad that you can't have relationships with the churches. Now, I hadn't really considered the, you know, people you never talk to ministry, but I assumed that there was going to be some level of relationship. And so I've advised men in the past to kind of target that 10 to 12 sweet spot. And that way no church is having to bury the burden alone. And you're giving the benefit of partnership to more than one church. That's another thing I don't like about just limiting it to one or two churches, because there's a benefit Paul talks about. He says it to the Corinthians. The benefit that they get in partnering together with him that I think needs to be shared among the churches. That way we all get to hear about what's going on in Chad. We all get to pray about what's going on in Chad. We all get to participate in that ministry. But I was a part of a large church that we gave $25 to everybody under the moon. And the missions pastor didn't even know who these people were. And when I first got here to Faith Community, we had one missionary, I think. We weren't even supporting Chris at this point. He was a guy in India, and I was like, well, you know, the guy's name was Udom. I was like, well, tell me about this guy Udom. They're like, the former pastor knew him. I was like, well, what does he do? We don't really know. So I called the mission agency that we were sending the money to. And I was like, can you tell me about Udom? He's like, oh, he's not in ministry anymore. I was like, what happened? Oh, he cheated on his wife a year and a half ago. We removed him. It's like,
where's my $25?
Yeah, I was going to say, we've been sending a check every month, and you haven't informed us of that. So I wouldn't be comfortable being too distant from the missionary and just sending the $25 and not really having any kind of relationship to know what's going on there. I want to have a little bit more skin in the game. So I don't know what these wise missionaries would say, but that's kind of where I have landed. Richard, did you have a comment?
It sounds to me like there's an element here where we have to embrace what is counterintuitive, because in my mind, when you start thinking about international missions and all the various factors that have gone into it, and the way it's developed over the years, and mission agencies, and on it goes, there's this idea, or this, I guess, virtue, quote unquote, associated with doing more and going further and getting out there bigger and all of that, when in reality, in order to have a coalition that is oriented around some of the priorities that have been articulated here, you have to think in terms of doing less, of not doing more, but doing less and doing it according to a certain clear set of principles. You have to get comfortable, it seems to me, with that concept, rather than when you think about the kind of the tongue-in-cheek remark I made about the cooperative program, but that's all about coming together so that we can do more. Hmm. We can do more better together than not. But what has been lost in all of that are some of the fundamental things that we've been talking about here and lamenting over. So I'm just wondering how you would kind of, am I thinking clearly about that?
Is that no. True? Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, no, that's those are all on target, on point there. And again, you've got to draw the line somewhere. You can become so deluded and that you're not accomplishing anything. So I guess every church has to determine that. We've tried, from a philosophical standpoint, early on, determining what kind of missions things that our church is called to support. We can't do everything. So we had, you know, training nationals. That's a big one, you know. Well, would we ever want to be involved in a real old school, you know, in the jungle, living in a treehouse, you know, indigenous group that doesn't even have a language yet, you know, be involved in that in some way? Well, that can be exciting, you know, if we found somebody there. What about translation work? That's a whole nother, you know, issue. And it goes on down the line. We even looked at, you know, Jesus' statement in Acts, you know, that you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, the uttermost parts of the earth, you know, and many have said, well, Jerusalem's kind of your local thing, and then you've got like state and national and country. So we even tried to do that in some sense, that we'd like our people to know that we're supporting something in our Jerusalem. So we have a couple of things we're doing. We're doing something statewide, you know, with a ministry, and then it's sort of state and nationally, and then overseas. So that's an approach. But I tell you how hard it is when you get a call, and we get lots of calls, and most, I say, you know, at this time, we're already, you know, supporting. We've already made our decision, so, you know, there's no need to come here. So we say no to some people that want to come present their ministry. But I also get calls from people like you, and that, man, this guy is a quality guy, and, boy, he's doing such a marvelous work. And you start finding out about it, and it's like, well, it didn't meet our little 3-4 bullet point thing we came up with, that this is what we're going to do. But this is an effective ministry. That's exciting. I think our people will get excited about that. So I think the reason we ended up with 20 missionaries is because we had 12 that we were pretty committed to, and then these others, well, those are effective ministries. I think our people would have some joy, you know, if we were, you know, behind this ministry and a part of it. So you got to draw this line somewhere, but I guess every church, I'm not giving you an answer, but every church will have to make that decision for themselves of how many they're going to take on and how they support it. But at this point on, we're not looking for any new ones, but if a unique, effective ministry was presented to us, it happened just a couple months ago, and we're going, you know what, for our new budget year, I think we're going to support this guy. So we had him come in, give a report to our church. We got to know him, spend some time with him as elders, but we weren't looking for him. Somebody called us, somebody in our network, and said, this is an effective ministry. And so we didn't want to say no to it. But I got to say no somewhere. Can't go forever with these things.
You have a comment, Jeff?
Just a comment on your support structure. You can be, if you have a one-on-one relationship, then you're all in on the east side of the equation. So I understand that. I mean, that church is going to be fully invested in that one missionary, and that missionary will be fully invested in that church. The other extreme is having 50 churches. You know, People's Baptist Church took us on south of Georgia, and they were south of Atlanta. I think we were number 200, yeah, $50 a month. So then there's a relationship of convenience. And then there's really a lack of distrust, meaning they don't really depend on them, they don't really depend on me. I could lose them, I don't need to sleep over it. So that relationship is very, very loose. So there's two ends of that. One is being a really, then it develops a philosophical distance with, I can't, as if the missionary is going to be the consistent one through the years, not the church. That's another issue. But so I think, yes, I think if I'm going to narrow down and have encourage missionaries to have under 10 supporting churches, not because I have a distrust of one church or another, it's because you can have a shared blessing of bringing resources together and have a shared vision and purpose together. Not because I don't trust one church, perhaps, to fulfill that or to depend on one. I hate the pragmatic side of, I don't depend on one guy. But I think those two spectrums, I think the one-on-one spectrum is difficult. And then as you grow your missions program, Heritage in our town was supporting by 50%. But as more and more people came on board, they went to 30 to 20. So, I mean, that part,
$10.
Yeah, that becomes challenging as well. So I think there is merit in having under 10 churches, but for the purpose of sharing resources and purpose and blessing together, not because that.
Yeah. Well, one thing we have to keep in mind, and we've tried to do this, is as our church has grown and our finances have been good and our budget grows every year and all that, is that then our missions budget is going to grow, that we don't just use that growth. Well, hey, we can add on 3 more new missionaries. We're also very sensitive to what we're already giving to some folks, and that these support levels need to be raised. So we do make sure that as we're increasing giving more to missions this year than we did last year, that's what our goal is, then we're also looking at these are missionaries that we need to raise their support, give them more because of cost of living, inflation, you know, all those kind of, they've had another child, whatever it might be, and not just add on new missionaries. So don't forget that as well. Make sure you're taking care of the ones you already have.
All right, we have reached our lunch hour. I know the ladies are getting the meal ready, so let me...
Sorry about the unfulfilled expectations, but... I didn't put all those expectations on me. You did.
let's have a word of prayer for our meal, and then we'll dismiss down there and hopefully carry on the conversation around the dinner table.